Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 212, The Experiologist. Read and recorded by Mitchell Two. Audio editing and post-production by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere in some time, a memory might be the most valuable thing in the world. Hi, I'm Victoria. I messaged you about the offer yesterday, the woman announced without knocking. Her auburn hair, tinged with gray, was cropped into a laid-back lob, which required minimal maintenance, suggesting a busy professional life. Her conservative, well-tailored gray suit slumped slightly on one side under the weight of an expensive-looking briefcase, which had seen better days. Likewise, her shoes were high-quality but well-used. In short, Victoria was not the usual kind of person who responded to my ads. Most have the sticky air of desperation clinging to them. Look, I don't exploit people. They come to me of their own free will. It's just, I guess that there is a particular type of person who wants to rid themselves of some past experience, usually negative and pedestrian, neither of which I am interested in. I turn these people away. Trauma and the everyday is not to my taste. I am a discerning collector of the exceptional, attracted to the unique, the one-off, something this Victoria claimed to have for sale. She certainly didn't reek of the usual desperation. Instead, I sensed curiosity, apprehension, and something else I couldn't quite grasp. Oh yes, of course. Victoria, please, come in and sit. I would get up to meet you, but as you can see, my condition limits my mobility. A year or two ago, maybe I could. Unfortunately, it's progressive. But you're not here to learn about my health problems. Victoria chose the Eames lounger and settled admiringly into it. I like these reproductions of classic modern designs. Actually, it's an original, I pointed out. As I told you yesterday, I collect only originals. You said you had something unique for me, Ms.
Dr. Tremblay, she corrected. I do, but I'm also fascinated by your process. How do you do it?
I don't really know, which was only partially true. Discovering and understanding the mechanism of my gift had been an obsession. I suppose I was born with the ability. In my youth, I ignored it, choosing to pursue work in the family business empire instead. I had used the story so often now that it rolled off my tongue, like the truth, and sometimes I caught myself believing it. Some would say being born into a wealthy and influential family, fortune had smiled upon me. But as you can see, wealth cannot buy longevity. Most in my family die before they are 60. We've been fortunate in business, but not in the genetic lottery. Now, enough of that. You're here to do business. What do you have for me, Dr. Tremblay? She put her briefcase beside her on the floor, then leaned forward and almost whispered in a conspiratorial tone.
The thrill of discovery, Mr. Hughes. There's nothing quite like it. I'm offering the memory of my breakthrough, a practical and cheap method of sustaining a fusion reaction. This is truly unique. It will revolutionize the world. Or I could...
I don't know what to think. I haven't collected any science-related experiences before. I lied. Have you published your discovery yet?
No. This is what makes the item unique. It's all still in my head. There's not even any research notes. You will have the moment of inspiration, the solution, and the privilege of being the first to release this historic advance to the world.
This was better than I had hoped. Generally, people want to sell an experience they can easily live without, not a potential history-changing moment. I was instantly hooked. I've bought the experience of a spacewalk, dives to the deepest depths of the ocean, the thrill of standing on a remote mountain peak, the meal of a lifetime cooked by a famous chef, and the taste of the last existing bottle of a rare wine, and over the years, the occasional invention, which I have never released to the world. An incredibly unique offer, Dr. Tremblay. Thank you for bringing it to me. I've come to realize we can only use objects, not own them. The chair you are sitting in, for example, an Eames original, the prototype, in fact, is a one-of-a-kind and therefore very desirable. Yet, it's had a history of owners, none of whom have managed to depart this world with it, so the chair remains as owners come and go. All we leave this world with is our experiences. Having spent most of my life managing the family's investments, I am, sadly, short in that area. It's why I have chosen to purchase them from others, like yourself. You understand that once I take an experience from you, it's gone, correct? It becomes mine exclusively. I have an eidetic memory. Are you willing to agree to that? This is a critical point. The seller needs to accept the terms.
I understand and agree.
She paused, and I think I caught the sight of a single tear at the corner of one eye. She looked away for an instant, and when she turned back, it was gone. Was that a performance just for me? I couldn't decide.
What's an idea, Mr. Hughes, if you don't have the means to realize it? I've lost all my funding. Selling this experience to you will at least allow me to continue to work.
Her eyes unconsciously darted to the side for an instant. I could sense there was something she wasn't saying. Normally, that would be a red flag, but the appeal of the experience she was offering overrode my caution. Yes, the proceeds of the sale may well indeed allow you to pursue your work for a very, very long time. You're certainly asking for a substantial sum. But you realize you will never come up with the idea again. You won't even remember you've sold it to me. It will be like it never happened. I just want to make sure you understand the terms. The experiences and the thought processes associated with it will be removed. They will transfer to me. You need to be completely at ease with this for the process to work.
I'll be honest, Mr. Hughes, this wouldn't have been my first choice, but it will allow me to do related research, and who knows, maybe that will be enough to inspire someone. You see, I don't believe in the uniqueness of ideas. Under similar conditions, the same solution will emerge in more than one place. Think about it. If you pour sand onto a surface, it will form a cone because that is the most stable form. It's not much of a leap from that to a pyramid. It's why they appeared in the architecture of so many early cultures. Pyramids were invented to solve a similar problem. We don't need to invent elaborate histories to tie them to a single source. So if I don't discover the key to fusion power, someone else eventually will. I can't sell you a guarantee against that happening. I'm offering you my personal experience of discovery. However, you can bring the knowledge I'm selling you to the world immediately. You have the resources to do it, and the world needs clean fusion power now, not in a decade or two. So, how do we do this?
I noticed Dr. Tremblay's smile seemed to be forced. When I tell you, just look into my eyes and remember what you want to sell me.
So, it's a form of hypnotism? You're going to give me a post-hypnotic suggestion to forget?
It's not that simple. I don't really understand what happens myself. I just have this ability to experience what you are thinking, and in doing so, remove the memory from your mind.
Has anyone ever remembered?
No, not even under hypnosis. One seller told me they tried. Look, if you are having second thoughts...
No, not at all, Mr. Hughes. I'm simply curious. It's part of my nature as a scientist.
Dr. Tremblay appeared to be satisfied.
I'm ready,
she announced after adjusting her position. Good. Let me send you the money before we begin. I started the transfer using an untraceable account. Dr. Tremblay's phone dinged, making her jump. She reached into her bag and pulled it out.
That's the confirmation of the transfer,
she said with relief. Were you expecting something else? I asked, curiously, suspecting she had.
No. Let's get going.
Okay, then. Relax. Take a few deep breaths. Focus on the memory of your experience and look into my eyes. She settled back into her chair, closing her eyes for a moment, then stared at me so intensely I almost had to look away. Fighting back the urge to avoid those deep, hazel eyes which seemed to shift color, I opened my mind. A torrent of images, sound and light flooded in, catching me off guard. I'm generally the one who has to initiate the connection. Instead, Dr. Tremblay's mind had reached out to me. It was the first time I had experienced such an aggressive seller. Usually they are passive at best and frequently resistant. Recovering, I began to see the world through Tremblay's eyes. It was no longer solid. Instead, the world was composed of lines of force and particles, churning in chaotic clouds like mosquitoes looking for a warm-blooded body to swarm. It started to reshape, then suddenly I knew. My heart sped up, and I began to feel more exhilarated than I had ever been before, more alive in that moment than my countless years distilled into a fraction of a second. The chaos began to reorganize into a swirling toroid, bound by patterns of glowing force. It morphed into a luminous sculpture of energy, so simple and at the same time more intricate and beautiful than anything I had ever experienced. It was perfection, an aspect of nature never seen before. Suddenly, the math cascaded through my mind, equally elegant and beyond my ability to comprehend, but I would be able to recall every subtle nuance. Such was my gift. It was so obvious, I wanted to shout and laugh. Once you could see it, it was as clear as the most pristine pool and as pure as sunlight. But to date, only one person knew, and that single soul would now be me. She could have asked for twice as much. Indeed, this was an excellent addition to my collection, a collection I would never willingly share. The moment of insight ran its course, and our minds parted abruptly. Dr. Tremblay, like every seller after the completion of a transaction, sat disoriented in her chair, staring at me, with that vacant look people have when they realize they've forgotten something significant, but have no clue what it is. Dr. Tremblay, I snapped my fingers, and her head jerked up with a start.
Where is...
You were in my office, Dr. Tremblay. You came here to sell me an experience to help support your new research.
Right. Did it work?
She stuttered. Yes, everything went fine. More than fine. Thank you for coming to me. It was, as promised, a unique and most exquisite experience.
And?
She prodded. And, as our agreement states, I cannot divulge what you have sold me. I know you don't remember, and that's the point. Check your bank balance. You have been very well compensated for your trouble. Dr. Tremblay shook her head, as if that would somehow fill the empty void left in her mind.
Okay, I guess. Please, give me a moment. I feel a bit disoriented.
Of course. Take as much time as you need. This transaction had been somehow different, I reflected, as I watched Dr. Tremblay leave the building on the security cameras. It wasn't the content of the memory, as incredible as that was. She looked back at the building as if she knew I was watching, then turned and walked into two men in their 30s, dressed in dark slacks and light blue shirts, who were blocking her path. She appeared to be arguing with the shorter one, wearing trendy dark glasses. He grabbed her arm and began to guide her toward a large white SUV, its side doors already open. I couldn't tell if she was going of her own volition or being coerced. The other man, whose clothes strained to contain a heavily gym-toned body, headed through the front door toward the elevators. I gathered up my laptop and looked around the office wistfully. Everything else was rented through a shell company and couldn't be traced to me. The setup had served me well. Under the tutelage of Mr. Hughes, my collection had grown substantially, but it was time to move on and for Mr. Hughes to be no more. I leaned against the wall and readied myself for the agonizing pain of transition. Being in one form for a long period risked a kind of atrophy where your cells begin to lose their desire to change. I pictured a seller from a few months back. They might be able to connect him to Hughes, but it was only a temporary form, and Hughes would be gone. My spine straightened, legs grew strong again, hair changed color, and my face lengthened, nose, mouth, and eyes shifting. I stifled a scream as pain, more intense than I remembered, tore through my body. Cells ripped apart, reformed, and the failing middle-aged man they had been disappeared. I had never tried to transition so fast after such a long period of stasis, and pain was still coursing through my new body as I pulled on a set of clothes I had kept with me just in case. I balled up Mr. Hughes' suit, hurriedly stuffed it into my bag, exited and locked the office, just as the elevator doors dinged open. Mr. Jim Muscles from the street, now accompanied by two immense friends, burst out. They ignored me as they hurried past, their bulk forcing me against the wall. I slipped into the elevator and pressed the lobby button. As the door rolled shut, I heard them banging on my former office door. Once they discovered it was empty, I would only have a few minutes' head start. The white SUV was still parked out front when I reached the street. Through the dark-tinted glass, I could just make out the silhouette of Dr. Tremblay between two men in the back seat. No one recognized me. I checked around to see if there was any more muscle loitering about, then quickly slipped into the late afternoon crowd flowing along the sidewalk at the end of the workday.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com and take a listen to The Breakfast Dish with Griffin Cork and his mum, Karen Johnson Diamond, to get to know Canadian artists. This podcast is gluten-free. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by ATB Financial. With expert practical advice in everyday banking and investment planning expertise and management services with ATB Wealth, you can be confident that you're making smart choices when it comes to your money. We have a history of doing what's right for our clients, especially when times are tough, because ATB was built to help Albertans. For more information, visit atb.com. This episode of Makeshift Stories was also brought to you by Northwest Fest International Documentary Festival, running online from May 6th to 16th. Even though Northwest Fest can't happen in a movie theater this year, we put together an outstanding lineup of some of the year's best docs. In fact, this year, there is a whopping 40 feature films, plus 40 short films available for viewing to anyone in Alberta. This is your chance to stream some of the hottest new docs from Canada and abroad. Many of these are Canadian, international, and even world premieres. All access streaming passes, ticket packs, and single tickets are available now at northwestfest.ca. Makeshift Stories is released twice a month around the 1st and the 15th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read and recorded by Mitchell Tu. Audio editing and post-production by Matthew Erdman. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit the website at makeshiftstories.com. Both links are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.